is coming, riding many a mile. Friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole.
Hello and welcome to the F-Ball NFL Podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hengst, AFC North lead writer at BleacherReport.com and Pro Football Focus fantasy football contributor. I'm joined this week, like every week, by my co-host, Brian.
Hey, what's going on?
Well, it finally happened.
It did.
The 2014-2015 NFL season is over. The Super Bowl has been played. It's been fought. It's been won by the New England Patriots, their fourth of the Tom Brady-Bill Belichick era, their fourth victory. New England winning, of course, 28-24 with that last-minute interception of Russell Wilson sealing the deal with approximately 20 seconds left to play. Of course, that followed that really amazing catch by Curse. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Just a spectacular game.
But it was a spectacular game.
It was a controversial but certainly enthralling finish.
Absolutely. And it started slow. Not surprisingly, just because both these teams had very physical defenses, then it kind of seemed like the balance of power and the shift of momentum, if you believe in such a thing, went heavily to the Patriots. But by the time we got to halftime, we were tied up.
Right.
So we ended up with a very compelling, close football game to close out the season. Another one of these classic Super Bowls that we've been having so many as of late. So it was a great way to end the season.
Yeah, it was.
Whether or not you're a Patriots fan, you have to admit that, you know, even if you don't like them, that was a heck of a game to watch.
I mean, the last year's Super Bowl was, we've discussed previously, it was interesting from a whole number of perspectives, but
it was a fascinating case study.
Yeah, but it wasn't like this great football game to watch. Yeah,
right.
And that, like, this was a great football game to watch, and not necessarily the way even you want to see a great football game end. Just a pick is never a great way to watch a game end, or in that situation where, like, the one team should score and then it's the
it happened and then you go, oh wait, it's over.
Like, yeah.
you're like, wait, they don't have any more scoring opportunities at and goal. There's only 20 seconds left.
That is the game. Yeah,
that's
right.
That's it.
Well, yeah, because it was so contentious. It was so back and forth.
Oh yeah,
and you know,
it just went.
Right, when that final interception happened and there's hardly any time left in the game, you're like, oh, wait, okay, it's actually going to end now, and that means the Patriots are going to win. But, yeah, it was so hard to get any sort of feeling like that throughout the whole game, which is a hallmark of a good game, I'd say.
You know? Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about that game with our good buddy Gary Davenport. He is an NFL and fantasy football analyst at Bleacher Report. He's also an IDP, individual defensive player, fantasy football expert, and he does so at Fantasy Sharks and for IDP Manor. He's going to be joining us after the break. We're going to break down the Super Bowl. We're going to talk about that final play, that controversial pass call by the Seahawks that resulted in the interception. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Cleveland Browns, who have had a very eventful past month with their organization. Josh Gordon, Johnny Manziel, all kinds of controversy involving the front office. And who better to talk about that with than not just an NFL analyst, but also a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan in Mr. Gary Davenport. So we're going to talk about Browns, we're going to talk about the Super Bowl with Gary Davenport right here after the break. So stay tuned to the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Friends, you get some silver, you get a little gold. What did you bring me, my dear friends? Keep me from the gallows pole. What did you bring me? Keep me from the gallows pole. I couldn't get no silver, I couldn't get no gold. You know that we're too damn poor in the gallows pole.
Our guest this week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast is Gary Davenport. He's an NFL and fantasy football analyst for Bleacher Report, an IDP expert for Fantasy Sharks, and over at IDP Manor as well. He's here to help us break down what happened in the Seahawks' loss in the Super Bowl to the New England Patriots, 28-24, and of course, the latest, greatest developments with the Cleveland Browns. How's it going, Gary?
Welcome.
It's going well. I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you, though. The crowd noise inside my bedroom has gotten a lot louder today for some reason. It's almost as if someone's piping it in.
Yeah, at least the Cleveland Browns aren't the only one with a strange controversy going right now with the Atlanta Falcons, apparently.
That would
illegally.
Be cool. I would like to have crowd noise pumped into my bedroom.
I don't think so. I like to sleep in silence. But, yeah, that's... it's interesting what like the little like nitpicky rules are in the NFL, because something like piping and crowd noise seems harmless enough. I mean, crowd noise can affect obviously opposing quarterbacks, but why don't the Falcons fans just get louder instead, and then they don't have to pump in this artificial noise?
Yeah, and what kills me. One, in today's NFL with so many teams going to silent counts, crowd noise isn't as big a factor as it was 10, 15 years ago. Not that it's not still a factor, but not as much as it was. And even with the piped-in crowd noise, the Falcons were 6-9 in the Georgia Dome over the last 2 years or something like that, which is just really, with the so-called advantage, it's like
right.
Deflategate. It's like scandals nowadays. For something to be a scandal, it has to be stupid. We've got footballs that are slightly deflated and crowd noise that doesn't help. And the general manager of a football team texting to the coach to tell him what plays to run, like it's a game of Madden or something. Can we get some real cheating if these teams are going to cheat?
No, I agree. These are all just sort of like these weird rule book perceived advantages, but there's been no real advantage to any of these three things. There's nothing changing about what the Patriots did or didn't accomplish this year. They would have, you know, defeated the Colts pretty handily, regardless of the inflation level of the football. The Cleveland Browns weren't going to, you know, go to the Super Bowl just because Ray Farmer is texting play calls to the offensive coordinator. And the Falcons had a horrific year, even though they were piping in fake crowd noise.
Well, like, maybe that's why they piped it in. It was just a rough year, you know what I mean? And fans were fans weren't cheering enough. maybe it made Arthur Blank feel better just to hear more crowd.
That's just a great way for Dan Quinn to start his tenure as head coach of the Falcons.
Right.
It's just nonsense.
Yeah, and I mean, Dan Quinn's coming in from, of course, the Seattle Seahawks, a team that has no trouble generating significant noise in its home stadium. And it was frankly pretty loud in support of the Seahawks in Arizona for the Super Bowl. But again, did that rattle the Patriots? Not so much. They pulled out that close victory with that crazy play at the end. I do want to talk about that crazy play, but before we talk about that crazy play at the end, we've got to talk about the crazy play right before the end, the curse catch that might have potentially been another one of those cursed catches,
cursed,
if you will,
yes,
along the lines of David Tyree and Mario Manningham. And it's all for naught because the Seahawks weren't able to score and instead turned the ball over there at the end. But that was one of the craziest things I've seen all season.
Oh, yeah. Had the Seahawks punched that ball into the end zone and won that game, we'd be talking about the curse catch as one of the great, if not the greatest, catch in NFL history. You know, the outcome of the game has a lot of bearing on that. But all credit to him for not giving up on that football as it's bouncing and bobbling around. And when it happened, David Tyree was first thing flashed through my mind. I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to happen again at University of Phoenix Stadium. Like, Tom Brady is never going to want to come within 800 miles of Glendale, Arizona again.
You know, obviously, Pete Carroll, the Seattle Seahawks, they're getting a lot of flack for making that decision to throw that pass when they did. You know, and again, if it had gone a different way, there would have been, you know, why didn't Belichick call that timeout, all this stuff. And there's been so many different explanations, you know, to try to break down why they did that. That they wanted to get a quick play out. They wanted to score, but they didn't want to score with too much time left on the clock to allow the Patriots to have another drive. There's a thing, you know, there's, well, yes, there's Marshawn Lynch, but he's actually not been too great at scoring from the one and the two on a consistent basis all season long. What are your thoughts about that decision to throw that pass? Was it a bad idea, or was it just a good defensive play?
Honestly, to me, it all comes back. I think the Seahawks got cute. They overthought things. And I understand that Lynch was only, what, 1 of 5, I believe, from the one-yard line this year. The Patriots gave up 5 out of 6 attempts from the one-yard line. So, you know, those are the kind of statistics that you can basically find one to back up whichever side of that argument you're on.
Sure.
The Patriots had not had a whole lot of success shutting down Lynch in the game. I think he was 24 for 106 was his stats in the Super Bowl. I'm not saying you run the ball right at Vince Wilfork, but if it's Marshawn Lynch, it's beast mode. You just, like I said, to me, it feels like they overthought things, and they overthought themselves right out of a world championship. Although I agree, Belichick should have called timeout too. As the clock's winding down, I'm like, why is Belichick not calling timeout? Why are you not calling timeout? You should really call timeout now, Bill.
Exactly, because I mean, you know, if that play would have worked, if that would have scored a touchdown, or if at least it would have been incomplete, I mean, then you only have 20 seconds left on that clock anyway. So, you know, and I you know, there's some people like, oh, well, Belichick didn't call timeout in order to try to get the Seahawks to be too cute about their play call, which is just that's assuming Belichick is a mind reader, and he might be a lot of things, but as far as I can tell, nothing's been proven yet about him being a mind reader.
I think I put that notion right there with the idea that the Seahawks didn't want Marshawn Lynch to score the Super Bowl winning touchdown because they would rather it be Russell Wilson because he's more marketable. And so some of these theories that these people put forth, it's like there's 14 different steps to this chain of thought you just spilled out. There was like 20 seconds left in the game. I'm pretty sure you can't make that many decisions that quick.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was Jimmy Haslam texting to Pete Carroll and saying, marketing really wants the quarterback to do this, okay? But it's so harebrained to think that a coach's decision about what play to run has something to do about which player would be more marketable to score a touchdown, you know, and win the game with. That's crazy.
Yeah, if I ever heard my head coach discuss such that, I'd probably fire him on the spot. I mean, I think your decision making is a little out of whack there, buddy. I want you to make the decision that's going to put points on the board so that we win. I'll worry about who. I mean, in a perfect world, would this NFL, let's say, probably rather have Russell Wilson score a game-winning touchdown than Marshawn Lynch? Yeah, in a perfect world, Russell Wilson's like marketers grew him in a little laboratory or something. And Marshawn's not. Although the spot with Marshawn and Rob Gronkowski and Conan O'Brien is the height of comedy.
That's amazing stuff.
You know, and I'm not entirely against the Seahawks making a decision to pass at some point in that situation because, you know, they had a couple of downs there. You know, you try with Marshawn Lynch on that first play, and maybe he gets a half a yard. Maybe he gets in for the touchdown. Maybe he loses half a yard. But I feel like that should be the jumping-off point in that situation. Just based on the identity of this team, the amount of time left on the clock, all of that, you know, I'm not opposed to a pass being part of that sequence there, but to open it up with the pass, I think is what I think is most curious.
Oh, I agree, especially since they still had the one timeout and it was second down, so you could have run the ball on second down, call timeout. If Lynch doesn't get in, you're looking at 15, 17 seconds, plenty of time to run a pass play on third down, and then fourth down, you can run or pass because it really doesn't matter because it's fourth down.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't mind the pass so much, even on second down. I don't understand that play, that particular play. You know, he's thrown over the middle in a crowded goal line situation. Everybody's expecting him to run the ball. That's perfect for play action. If you feel a need to pass there, that seems like a no-brainer for play action and throw something in the corner, you know, but...
Right. Nice little back shoulder fade to say Chris Matthews, the big wide receiver that had been killing the Patriots.
Who was blowing up all day, yeah.
Yeah, this guy who's never caught and didn't catch a pass at all, all year long, and then he, you know, he was on the path to be MVP of that game. Wilson does a little play action, throws him that touchdown, and all of a sudden this guy no one's ever heard of, who's never had a catch, could be MVP of the Super Bowl, which would be so entertaining of a story. It would just be like, it would be a really good story, you know?
Right.
Oh, I was working during the game, and it's one of the things I mentioned to Wes O'Donnell, the editor of Bleacher Report, as we're sitting there, and I'm like, it's Kenny Smith all over again.
Yeah.
The running back for the Redskins. No one had any idea who Timmy Smith was before that game. 6 months afterwards, no one knew who Timmy Smith was because he's already out of the league. But for that one glorious afternoon against the Broncos, he was unstoppable.
Yeah, the Seahawks were just waiting till the Super Bowl to unleash this weapon.
That makes the most sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because maybe he's pretty marketable too. The other thing that really impressed me, though, about the Super Bowl, I mean, because we've been seeing it all year, you know, and I think that because the Patriots have Tom Brady as their quarterback and all of this, that the defense often, you know, takes the back seat. It's kind of underrated for the Patriots, but it's been a good defense all year. But I was really interested to see how truly physical that defense was, physical to the point where it was comparable to what the Seahawks, you know, try to do on a weekly basis, and I was very impressed by that.
Oh, I think honestly, it was almost a blessing in disguise for that defense when Jerod Mayo got hurt this year, because it forced Jamie Collins and Dont'a Hightower to both kind of take on leadership roles, very important mm-hmm. roles in the middle of that defense, and both those young linebackers stepped up big time. I think they were both in the top six at Pro Football Focus among inside linebackers against the run this year. I mean, you just can't say enough about the way Jamie Collins and Dont'a Hightower played. And you're right. The Patriots defense really doesn't get the credit. There's a lot of talent on that defense. Even if Darrelle Revis walks away in the offseason, they've got a deep secondary, got great bookend defensive ends in Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich. The young defensive tackle, Dominic Easley, who almost redshirted as a rookie, should be in for a much bigger role next year. And then you look at those linebackers, you've got Hightower, Collins, and potentially Jerod Mayo coming back. So the Patriots will be right there in the mix to become the first team to repeat since the Patriots repeated.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I feel like we're kind of at a different place than we were a year ago, where you looked at Seattle's defense and said, okay, nobody can really match this. Nobody can really top this. They're ready to go. And now it seems like that focus has kind of shifted towards that Patriots defense because they have the depth and the youth. And then you have all of these guys in Seattle. You know, everybody in the Legion of Boom is significantly injured to the point where they might all need surgery. I mean, you got Cam Chancellor playing the entire game on a torn MCL. You have the multiple ligament tears that Richard Sherman's dealing with that may or may not result in Tommy John surgery. You know, that's all of a sudden a very banged up, also very expensive, and getting more expensive defense. So it's going to be interesting to see how Seattle can try to keep that core together, see how healthy these guys can get by the time week one rolls around in order to maintain that dominance. Whereas the Patriots, they're mostly healthy, they're very deep, they're very young, and they seem to be kind of taking up that mantle of the type of defense Seattle has built, and they've built one for themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And the Seahawks have some tough questions to answer. They're going to have to find the money to re-up Bobby Wagner.
Yep.
I think they need to do something about their front four. They did not put as much pressure with that on the quarterback this year with that defensive line. And part of it was, you know, that line was so deep. It never really had a star at the top. They would just rotate guys constantly. But you've seen guys like Chris Clemens leave. I think Cliff Averill took a step back for them this year. Michael Bennett was lights out. But they need to get a complimentary piece for that front four besides Michael Bennett. And Bruce Irvin, you know, every time it looks like he's going to take that next step forward in his evolution as a player, he's getting kicked out of the Super Bowl for being a chucklehead.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they can maintain that. I think, you know, obviously on the offensive side of the ball, you know, everything is probably just going to kind of trend upward for them, regardless of the status of Marshawn Lynch in the future. They've got some depth at running back that can kind of replace him, not replace him completely, but they have some competent running back depth. Obviously, Russell Wilson's Russell Wilson. He's only going to get better. He's been to two Super Bowls in his first three seasons already, and he constantly – he looks better every year. He's got some accuracy. shorter ball accuracy stuff that he needs to work out, but he seems smart enough to do that. But it is interesting to see that, you know, this is a team that everybody's like, okay, it's the run game and the defense that carries it. Now you've got free agents, you've got injuries, and you know who knows what is playing on a torn MCL going to do to affect Cam Chancellor in week one, week two next season. What is that elbow if Sherman needs surgery, or if he doesn't? Tearing multiple ligaments in your arm and your elbow is going to affect you for the rest of your life. So how is that going to affect the way that he plays the ball, the way he plays on receivers? So that's going to be interesting to see how the offseason develops, you know, with Seattle's defense.
Yeah, there are some questions. And it's been, I think they said, the last time that a team lost the Super Bowl the previous year and came back to win it the next year was the 72 Dolphins. So the Seahawks will be fighting history a little bit in 2015 as well. Brother, I hold you down, see you away.
There's another team, switching gears to the Cleveland Browns. There's another team that's fighting history and losing their battle against history. It seems like since the Cleveland Browns came back in the league in 1999, they can't make any long-term decisions that are positive. And now this past month has just been brutal for the team. Josh Gordon failed another drug test, apparently for alcohol, which he was banned from imbibing in because of his DUI. And now because he's failed yet another drug test, he's banned from the league for at least a year. Meanwhile, quarterback Johnny Manziel is in rehab for an indeterminate amount of time. We already talked about a little bit about the Ray Farmer being the GM, Ray Farmer being the one texting plays and suggestions about players and playing time to Kyle Shanahan and others, which could lead to him being suspended potentially for a couple of games, maybe a loss of a draft pick, some fines. You've got Jordan Cameron, the free agent tight end, reportedly turning down a $6 to $7 million a year deal, who plainly wants out of Cleveland, and that's why he turned it down. There's Kyle Shanahan's 32-point presentation that he presented to Mike Pettin on why he wanted out of the Browns organization. And then they want to package a bunch of picks and trade up for Marcus Mariota. What is going on right now with the Cleveland Browns?
It's all at the top. It's Jimmy Haslam. He's the marionette, the puppeteer pulling the strings, and it's as if Mark Davis's incompetence met Jerry Jones' inability to stay out of it and collided together to create the ultimate anti-owner. And, of course, if any team in the NFL was going to get one of those, it would be Cleveland. Jason Lockenfora of CBS Sports said that the atmosphere inside the building is toxic, that if people could get out, there would be rats off a sinking ship, and that everyone's afraid to come the end of this season when the Browns don't make the playoffs, because it's not going to happen.
No.
That Haslam's going to do the same thing he did after the 2013 season and blow the organization up again. And this is the nightmare scenario for Browns fans. You can't fire the owner.
Exactly. There's no one that can remove the owner unless for some reason the other owners in the NFL consider him grossly incompetent and vote him out, essentially. And the heartbreaking thing about all this, I think, is when Jimmy Haslam took over ownership, everybody thought this was a positive step in the right direction. You know, he was a minority owner for the Steelers. It turns out he didn't do anything, didn't go to any meetings, didn't help make any decisions, just went to games and hung out in the owner's box. But they thought that maybe something good was going to come out of this. You know, this is a experienced, successful businessman, obviously, you know, interested in owning this team, making this team better, paying a lot of lip service to that. And it's become a farce. That's the worst part of it, though, because the change of ownership to Jimmy Haslam from Art Modell, it was supposed to be the thing. It was supposed to be, or for the Modell family, it was supposed to usher in a new positive era for the Browns. And instead, it's not just more of the same, but it's worse. Like Bud Shaw from the Cleveland Plain Dealer said, He's covered at this point about 30 coaches or so for the Cleveland Browns, and you know, been doing, you know, being on the Browns beat for a really long time, and this is the worst he's seen it so far.
In retrospect, maybe we should have known that things possibly weren't going to work out when Haslam's business headquarters were raided by the FBI like 3 days after the sale of the Browns was finalized.
That's true. But, that's true.
I mean, it would be, imagine how much better off Cleveland would be if it was just the Jimmy Haslam from Pittsburgh that didn't do anything, that didn't go to meetings, that just showed up at the games and hobnobbed. If he would just do that in Cleveland, it would be infinitely better than what he's doing now, which is meddling in any number of things for which he just has no idea what he's doing. You know, he wanted Johnny Manziel, so they drafted Johnny Manziel ahead of Teddy Bridgewater, who Ray Farmer had higher on his board.
And Derek Carr.
They had Josh Gordon shipped off to the San Francisco 49ers for at least a second-round pick. He vetoed that deal. Now they'll get absolutely nothing. It's just like it's a nightmare, and there's no light at the end of this tunnel for Browns fans, and if there is a light, it's a semi headed the opposite direction with Jimmy Haslam behind the wheel just grinning like a fool.
Fueled by Pilot Flying J.
Absolutely.
And it's just unbelievable because it's hard for me to think the only thing, and it's hard for me to think that this will happen either. I mean, maybe Haslam will eventually kind of wake up and understand that he's the one who's creating these problems. He's the problem. Instead of saying, well, if it's somebody, it's people who don't agree with me, that's their problem, and then I'll fire them, like he did with Joe Banner and Michael Lombardi, and like he's probably going to do within 12 months with Mike Pettine. I don't see a guy like Mike Pettine, by the way, sitting around and want to deal with Jimmy Haslam for much longer either, just because he's dipping his hands in this,
yeah,
this football team.
It might be mutual.
It might be mutual. But then you've got Alex Shiner, the team president is supposed to just be able to be dealing with the business and marketing kind of side of things. And you have him and Jimmy Haslam on 6 a.m. on Monday mornings meeting with Mike Pettine to look over film. And not to learn stuff, but to add input into the football side of the business.
It's insane. I know. And it's, like I said, it's the worst nightmare for a sports fan is that that's the kind of owner you're going to get. One of the things that makes Robert Kraft such a phenomenal owner, besides the fact that he built a stadium just with his money, is that he knows when to just stay out of it.
Right.
And let the people who he hired, who are very intelligent and have decades of experience doing what they're doing, do their job.
Yeah. I mean,
not Jimmy Haslam. No, no, no. We don't want to draft that guy. We want to draft that guy. I like his shoes. My shoes.
He's like a crazy. He's like you graft Mark Davis and Jerry Jones together, you know. But he has no clue about football. Or
hey guys,
very little clue.
I think Dan Snyder's starting to get a little, you know, lonely here. You've been leaving him off when you're talking about weird owners. So
and making poor meddlesome decisions.
Actually, he's probably benefiting the most out of this, just because, like, you know, the Haslam's kind of. If you're ranking, you know, worst owners, Haslam's making a leap towards that top position.
Oh, I'm terrified that the Browns are going to give Ndamukong Suh an Albert Haynesworth contract, because they've got the cap space to do it. They're one of the few teams that do have the money to give Suh some ridiculous. I'm not saying Ndamukong Suh is not a great football player, but the highest paid defensive player in the NFL. I just don't want to tie that much cap space up in a defensive tackle. But if there's a team in the NFL that would, Jimmy Haslam will say, you know what? That's a nice shirt you got. $17 million.
Exactly. And then and a guy like Ndamukong Suh, the Browns want to pay him all that money, he's gladly going to take that money. But do you think he's going to enjoy the environment of the locker room, of losing, of Haslam being so hands-on? You know, it would be a disaster. I don't think that he would be productive in Cleveland, just because the environment and the situation would not be – it wouldn't be motivation for him.
Oh, and if the Browns want any high-name free agents, that's what it's going to take, overpaying those players to such a ridiculous amount that it overcomes this stigma that is now being attached to Cleveland. I mean, you look at guys like Demaryius Thomas and Dez Bryant. I wrote an article yesterday at Bleacher Report about potential wide receiver replacements for Josh Gordon.
Sure.
and in the comments, of course, a couple of people were like, well, why can't we go get Randall Cobb? Why can't we go get Demaryius Thomas? I'm like, they're not going to, even if by some stretch they were to leave Green Bay and leave Denver, which is unlikely to begin with, they're not coming to Cleveland.
They're not going to come to Cleveland. Why would they?
It's, well,
maybe
if
Manning retires or something like that.
No.
Maybe.
No. Demaryius Thomas will go somewhere with a quarterback where he can win.
Sorry. He might leave Denver. He's not going to Cleveland.
No.
Right. And it creates just this cycle that is so hard for NFL teams to break. And, I mean, you can have a bad coach and general manager that can put you into it after just a few years. We could be looking at a decade of Jimmy Haslam doing this. The mistake by the lake is back. And I'm a Browns fan.
The other thing, too, that's so dismaying about this is because you can see kind of how this is going to play out. You know, whether or not Johnny Manziel puts it together and can be a starting quarterback, whatever. Josh Gordon, in my opinion, is done in the NFL. You know, there are a lot of people who disagree with that. He's still young, blah, blah, blah. But this suspension is at least 1 year, and we saw with Justin Blackmon it ended up being two. So who knows if this will be, just a year. But you look at everything, the way everything is lining up. You bring in Kevin O'Donnell to be the quarterback's coach, which means the odds now of them re-signing Brian Hoyer to compete for that quarterback job is much lower, considering Hoyer beat out O'Donnell for the Tom Brady backup job a few years ago. They're probably not the chummiest buddies, and that's also a bizarre working environment. So whatever happens at quarterback, or they destroy Marcus Mariota by trading up and drafting for him because Cleveland's now the place where young quarterbacks go to die. And you see the end game, which is Mike Pettine, this coaching staff, and maybe even Ray Farmer. But at least this coaching staff is going to get completely overhauled in a year. Who is going to want to coach the Browns? It was bad enough a year ago trying to figure out who actually wanted to even interview for these jobs and these coach and coordinator positions in Cleveland. Another turnover, and who is going to want the job? Who's going to interview for it? It makes it ever increasingly an undesirable place to be.
Right, which means you have to go that much deeper down your list of potential candidates before you find a guy who's willing to even discuss it. So we saw it last year with Pettine. He was like Cleveland's fifth or sixth. I mean, they'd said, of course, at the end, oh, he was our first choice all along. We just, talked to those other eight guys because. And the same thing will wind up happening with the general managers, which in turn just increases the chances that the guy you get maybe wasn't qualified to coach or be the general manager of an NFL team. And it just keeps that circle spinning that much faster. And they're going to dig themselves to the other side of the planet in all due speed with Jimmy Haslam at the helm. I don't know if sad covers it at Browns fan. It's miserable, and it's going to be miserable for the foreseeable future.
No, it's miserable just to stand by and watch and cover because you for a minute it seemed like, okay, so Brian Hoyer really wants to be the quarterback there. He's playing all right. The center goes down. They can't run the ball. They can't pass the ball because they can't run the ball. Josh Gordon comes back. They throw to him 29 times in two games, and it's a complete freaking disaster. And it just like you saw it, and you were like, it was like a roller coaster, but you didn't know that there was the drop. You just kept like, oh, it's going up. Maybe it'll just like stay up for a while. But it comes back down because of Jimmy Haslam. And the longer that he's the owner and takes this approach to ownership, we're just going to keep seeing the carousel of quarterbacks, the carousel of coaches, the carousel of defensive schemes. 3-4, 4-3 and back again, which has not helped any of these guys have been there for a while. The carousel of coaches, quarterbacks, GMs, it's just not going to end.
No, absolutely not. And in retrospect, a few years ago, Browns fans were saying, oh, wow, I really hope the feds don't indict Jimmy Haslam. He seemed like a great owner. In retrospect, maybe we should have been wishing. You know, I hope they come with an indictment pretty quick. Hurry up, indict him.
Yeah, everybody's like worst nightmare was, oh, we get this owner who really wants to fix this team, and then he's going to get indicted, and then the owners are going to vote him out, and then what? Well, now it's like, man, almost had the chance to not have Jimmy Haslam own this team any longer.
As a Browns fan, I can't say I'm surprised, because this is what being a Browns fan is like. there's, you know, occasionally a little, you go up a little hill, maybe a taste of happiness, something to put a smile on your face for a moment, and then reality will crush it.
Yeah.
I should have known. My first year as a Browns fan was the season that ended in the Red Wright 88 play in the end zone against the Oakland Raiders. So I can sympathize with Seattle fans that you're driving down the field about ready to score the game-winning touchdown in a postseason game, and instead of giving it to your bruising tailback, you throw it and get picked off in the end zone. Red Wright 88. That was my first year as a Browns fan. You'd think I would have maybe taken that as some sort of hint from the universe. No, I stuck around for the drive. I stuck around for the fumble. I stuck around when they moved the team to Baltimore. Stuck around when the team came back. Now I'm stuck with Jimmy Haslam. And that quarterback jersey for the Browns is just going to keep getting longer and longer and longer and longer and longer and longer.
That's true. That's true. And I honestly was saying to Brian earlier, if they want to package a bunch of picks and move up for Marcus Mariota, then I suggest Marcus Mariota pull an Eli Manning and say, no, I'm not going there. That will kill my career. There's nothing good about this. This is not a good situation. If I want to be in the league for more than 2 years, as considered as anything other than a pathetic backup, then you guys can sign me all you want, but you got to trade me because I'm not going there.
That would be great if Mariota was like the first one to say no to Haslam.
And Mariota does need to be careful because a bad situation could trash. There's a fairly decent bust potential with Marcus Mariota as he makes the transition from the college game to the NFL. So landing spot's going to be really important with him. And I agree with Andrew. If he ends up in Cleveland, it's going to be a dumpster fire. Everything in Cleveland is a dumpster fire. Why would he be any different? Look at Justin Gilbert, who apparently was pulling a Johnny Manziel by the end of the season, not showing up for meetings and just being a general pain to coaches. And to allow that kind of stuff to go on. And it's just, there's that sort of dysfunction in the Cleveland organization at every level, from parking lot attendant to general manager.
And they just raised season ticket prices. They raised, well, ticket prices in general by, what, 30%, 20%, something like that?
Of course they did, because they know Browns fans will keep coming anyway because we are loyal and masochistic in equal amounts.
That is true. I mean, I will give it. I will give that to Browns fans in my time covering this team. Is like, this team, these fans are so loyal to this team when they absolutely do not have to be. It's an admirable trait, but it's also like, oh, honey, why do you keep doing this to yourselves?
Oh, thanks, Andrea. That's
absolutely
so true. And the, oh, honey, you football fans. That's great.
So, looping back to the current quarterback situation, obviously, I feel like it's pretty good. Manziel's made a proactive decision here going into treatment for his alcohol issues. They expect him to be back for the Browns, expect him to be back for training camp. I mean, is this going to be a thing that really does propel Manziel to work harder? I mean, where do you think that this team is at and should go when it comes to quarterback, considering that Marcus Mariota is going to ask for a trade if he gets picked up?
I want to think that this will be the thing that kind of turns on the light bulb for Johnny Manziel and he can turn it around. But I certainly don't think the Browns can count on it. I think whether that plan is to trade up in the draft and make a run at Mariota or sign a free agent to be a bridge guy while you pick up a developmental quarterback or wait until 2015 and get a bridge guy to just hold you over until then, I don't think at this point that you can at all count on Johnny Manziel to be the long-term answer for the Cleveland. There were already enough questions surrounding him if he had applied himself 100%.
Right.
And yes, checking himself into rehab would appear to be a positive first step for him, but I'm going to need to see a few steps in a row. I'm going to need to see that it's more than just lip service, because we've seen Johnny Manziel pay all kinds of lip service to doing the work, and I'm going to put in the work, and it's going to be all about the work. And then when it came time to actually do the work, Johnny was at the club. So
right.
I'm reserving judgment for now. Cautiously optimistic, but the Browns, I don't think you can be so hopeful that you're not making plans around him.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to re-signing Brian Hoyer, but again, with the Kevin O'Donnell thing, it's that has a level of tension to it. I do think it wouldn't be a bad move in terms of free agents, but I do worry that if they bring in Mark Sanchez, he'll end up being the starter in 2015, and then there are more opportunities for really bad jokes.
No, that's fine. In a way, it would just be the cosmos bringing everything full circle for Sanchez and the Browns to come together. So, I wouldn't even be surprised.
He's going to Buffalo.
Why not?
Guys.
I've been through some of the quarterbacks that the Browns have had over the years. Oh, my goodness. I can remember Vinny Testaverde back there for Cleveland. Always an adventure, Vinny. No, guys. No, Vinny. The guy in the other helmet, Vinny. That's the opponent, Vinny.
I
never understood why Testaverde. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I always wonder what might have come from the Brady Quinn and Colt McCoy picks, because neither of those guys had a ton of a chance because they're drafted by one regime and then thrust upon a different regime, and there's no continuity there. And I really, truly wonder if either of those guys are actually quite good quarterbacks that were just kind of crushed up by the Browns, you know, not having any consistency at coaching.
I wonder how Tim Couch might have been if he could have played behind an offensive line that was even semi. It's the same thing with David Carr. They both got thrown to the wolves behind expansion offensive lines and just got beat to death their rookie seasons.
Yeah.
I think Couch was sacked like 62 times that year or some ridiculous number.
Hey, it could be worse. It could be poor Blake Bortles can sack 70 times this year.
He's a big boy. He can take it.
70?
Yeah, Jacksonville's offensive line is not good. Actually,
hey,
Mike Dempsey, gentlemen from...
He's going to take care of business.
Mike Dempsey, one of the gentlemen who I did the Radio Row thing with, he covers the Jaguars in Jacksonville. And I actually know a couple of Jags beat writers, and I'm like, oh, honey.
Yep. Exactly. At least there's this one milestone the Browns didn't hit this year is giving up 70 sacks on their quarterbacks, plural. What do you think about Connor Shaw? Because there was a lot, there was a lot of talk after the season ended of guys in the locker room responding more positively to Connor Shaw than Johnny Manziel, especially because he had that lacerated kidney. He played through that. He had the busted up finger. He was playing through that. He knew the playbook allegedly better than Manziel, even though, you know, with Connor Shaw, he's, you know, undrafted guy, third string quarterback there. Do you think that there's any traction for Connor Shaw?
Oh, I think that would be an awfully uphill climb for him, but you never know. I mean, I think if nothing else, you'd give him a chance to get a few reps in camp, especially depending on what the Browns do from a personnel standpoint between now and camp. But, yeah, I put him in the mix. Like you said, frankly, he played better than Manziel. So I don't care what round you were drafted in. If you were drafted at all, it makes the only thing that should matter is your ability to throw the football down the field. Unfortunately, Jimmy Haslam's more worried about jersey sales and whatnot. But
exactly.
Yeah,
and
put him in the mix.
And that's where, you know, Haslam and Patton have probably, I would assume, butting heads over this, in person, just because Patton is very emphatic about, I don't care when you were drafted or if you were drafted or how much money you make. If you're not out there making the plays, if you're not putting in the effort, then we're not going to put in the effort for you. You know, whereas Jimmy Haslam is very much, you know, this is a first-round guy. This is my first-round guy. You know, put him on the field. Make sure this guy plays. And it seems like that, I think that might end up being the crux of the ultimate falling out whenever that happens between Patton and Haslam.
At the rate things are going, it will happen sometime next week.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm also worried about, is that the way things are going right now and have been going over the past month, that I don't think this necessarily means that Mike Pettine's job is particularly safe moving forward or presently, right at the present moment, that, you know, they could just promote O'Neill to, you know, interim head coach or something and find somebody next year, because it just seems like Haslam and Pettine are on their way to a collision course, and maybe it's a year from now, but I'm with you. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it's a week from now or a month from now or like during training camp or leading up to the draft. That would not surprise me at this point.
No, at this point, it wouldn't surprise me if it happened at halftime of the second preseason game. I mean, nothing. This last month, just the never ending, it's just a cavalcade, a barrage. And if the Browns are going to keep cranking out these stories every few days, then you got to figure the coach getting fired is going to come up some point in the next couple weeks. I don't know what else will happen. Something involving livestock or who knows.
Yeah, because the thing about Jason Lockenfour's report from today, from Wednesday, is how the mentions of Pettine are kind of conspicuously absent. There's no one in there saying, well, you know, this source from the Browns or this person is saying Pettine thinks such and such about Haslam, or Haslam thinks such and such about Pettine. And I think that those kinds of details were left out kind of on purpose, because there's something working between that, going on between their dynamic, that's basically you can kind of assume just based on the tone of the people talking to Lockenfour and what they're saying. You can kind of assume that relationship is not good, but there is no outright mention of the actual relationship between those two. And I think that's
right,
ominous.
And if there's friction between the two right now, these reports coming every couple of days painting it in a negative light, it's not going to help matters, especially when you've got a guy like Haslam who we've already seen. You know, he's got a pretty quick trigger. Once he decides he's going to fire people, next thing you know, the coach, general manager, team president are all gone.
And, you know, you can break down all the, you know, everybody's got their takes, if you will, you know, on Josh Gordon and Johnny Manziel and their substance use or abuse issues. And people can, you know, say, well, these rules or these guidelines are pretty stupid or whatever. Josh Gordon, you know, he wrote that defense of himself saying, you know, you don't know me, I don't have a problem. Sound very much like a 23-year-old there. But you, bottom line is, you just don't have this with other teams. You don't have a guy suspended for a year because he didn't know the rules of drug testing, while at the same time your first round draft pick quarterback goes into rehab, while at the same time your free agent tight end was just offered a deal that he's probably not going to get anywhere else, and he said thanks but no thanks, I'm out of here. I mean, and then you've got the Farmer thing, and then you've got this story coming out today about Haslam and Kyle Shanahan. You just, these things just don't happen in a month span to any team.
No, especially not if you're hoping to be a successful team, because so much of the NFL is perception when you're trying to attract free agents or coaching candidates or any, and the Browns just aren't going to be able to do any of that because right now they're a punchline, and they deserve to be a punchline if this is honestly the way that the franchise is being run. And until there's a huge shift in the way the franchise is being run, things are only going to get worse. They're not going to get better.
Yeah, that seems to be the sentiment amongst people everybody's been talking to in the Browns organization. And unfortunately, it might be the case. So, for you as a Browns fan, I'm sorry.
Our condolences.
Our condolences. And yeah, with that,
I wrote today that I don't think we're close to rock bottom yet. We'll know rock bottom when we see it. Although with the Cleveland Browns, you never know, because you could hit rock bottom and then punch through that to a whole undiscovered level of bottom.
That's true. They
redefining
the
bottom.
They have redefined
the
bottom since 1999.
We should put that on a shirt. We might be able to make a couple bucks.
Yeah, I think I know a lot of people in Cleveland who might be interested in spending about $15 on that. Well, with that, Gary, thanks for joining us this week and helping us recap the Super Bowl that was, and of course the Browns that are.
Yeah, awesome stuff.
Before we let you go, of course, please let our wonderful listeners know where they can find you around the internet.
Absolutely. I cover the NFL at Bleacher Report, cover the individual defensive player side of fantasy football at Fantasy Sharks and IDP Manor. You can follow me on Twitter at IDP Manor, IDPMANOR.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us this week. We have had no technical difficulties, so I think we'll be able to proceed as planned with this. And we'll definitely have you on again. I'm sure other Brown stuff will be happening. And if not, we'll talk some IDP here moving forward.
Oh, pleasure was all mine. Anytime.
All right. Great.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot. Have a great night. Back here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. Big thanks again to Gary Davenport for joining us this week.
Yeah,
everybody,
absolutely.
Follow him on Twitter, read his columns. They're excellent. And we'll definitely have him back talk about the defensive side of things with fantasy football. I know we do a lot of the offensive fantasy football talk with Rumford Johnny, so we can have Gary on and do some of the IDP stuff because it's crazy sweeping the nation.
Sure.
Yeah,
we should do that before right around draft time,
sure.
We'll take a look at maybe we'll have Johnny on and
we'll do some,
take
we'll,
his fantasy
some,
take on things, and then
some
maybe
rookie drafting.
Yeah, exactly, because that's one thing that's of concern to people that play dynasty with the defensive players is you got to worry about where do you draft those guys
yeah.
and things like that. So and what's the draft class defensively look like?
Exactly. So we'll have both that being Gary Davenport and Rumford Johnny talking about rookies in fantasy football, I'm sure, in these coming months. But for now, thanks to Gary for joining us and talking about the Super Bowl and the Cleveland Browns. And with that wraps up this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast. Before we go, of course, it's time to read from the Little Giant Book of Football Facts.
Of course.
This week we got some quarterback facts for you. Starting, of course, with Super Bowl champion quarterback Tom Brady of the New England Patriots did not start a single game for his high school freshman football team in California, even though his team was 0-9. Not a single start.
Well,
as a freshman, even though they weren't winning, and they might as well just try something different.
It was still a freshman, though, and it was never mind.
I thought he was small. Jim Plunkett, Joe Capp, and Tom Flores are all Mexican-American athletes who played quarterback in the National Football League.
Okay.
Sonny Sixkiller is a Native American athlete who established numerous passing records in the 1970s as a quarterback at the University of Washington.
That's an awesome name, by the way.
Sixkiller?
Yes.
That's pretty good. Sonny Sixkiller, that's a good name. Especially if his first name is like Santino, like Sonny from The Godfather, like Santino Sixkiller, that's brutal. Los Angeles Rams star quarterback Roman Gabriel is the son of a Filipino laborer who immigrated to the United States.
All right, this is the ethnic portion of the book.
George Blanda was intercepted more times than any other NFL quarterback. Blanda threw 277 interceptions during his long NFL career. Joe Namath of the NY Jets, I'm going to say whatever they say, of the NY Jets, was the first NFL quarterback to pass for more than 4,000 yards in a single season. Namath passed for 4,007 yards in 1967.
Yeah.
Quarterback Ty Detmer attempted 1,530 passes during his college career at Brigham Young University. He completed 958 of those passes. And finally, quarterback Willie Totten of 1AA Mississippi Valley threw 9 touchdown passes in a game against Kentucky State in 1984.
Who could forget that?
Who could forget that great Division I AA Mississippi Valley Kentucky State game from 1984?
It's a classic.
It's a classic. I was 2 years old and I remember that.
I think I watched the reel-to-reel once.
Again, as always, if anybody finds some of these facts are not so much facts, please let us know via Twitter, either Brian or myself, and you'll be handsomely rewarded for your sleuthing efforts.
Absolutely.
And that means that this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL podcast has come to a close.
Sadly enough.
Again, thank you to Gary Davenport for joining us this week, talking about the Super Bowl and the Browns. And, of course, a big thank you, of course, to all of you, our listeners, for joining us week in and week out here when we talk about football and stuff here at the F-Ball NFL podcast. So football season's over, but the podcast isn't. The scouting combine.
Oh, there's so much happening.
Scouting combine's 2 weeks away.
Free agency's going to be shortly thereafter.
Free agency's a few weeks after that. And then, of course, we get right into draft season, so we'll
well,
be
we're already into draft season, but we'll get into draft season.
I'll be into draft season. So so we'll be keeping up with our podcast here, because there's always be something to talk about. Like we were discussing with Gary earlier, it's possible Mike Pettine gets fired in a week, because who knows what's happening in Cleveland.
Never know.
Never know. So we'll be here to recap all of the news worth talking about in the National Football League every week here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. So be sure to catch us next Wednesday. And until then, enjoy whatever it is people do when there's no football on. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do.
Marbles.
Puzzles?
Puzzles. Marbles. Jacks. Yeah, let's play Jacks.
Let's play Jacks. Got to figure out some way to pass the time. We're about 200 and 200 some odd days away from the start of the 2015 National Football League season. So anyways, again, thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Hope you enjoyed the show, and hopefully you'll enjoy some to come back next Wednesday.
Later.
Thursday.
Later. Peace.